You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 8th, 2009, episode 82. It's a small Wells, after all. It's time again for the Wells Tech Podcast. First of all, a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in once again. We appreciate your ears and your feedback as well, and we'll give you some opportunities and ways to talk with us and to us a little bit later on in the show. As usual, by my side is Sally Draper from beautiful Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Beautiful Sleepy Eye, that's right. Good morning, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. The excitement is brewing around our house. We've got some fellas that are heading off to the International Youth Rally this week.
I sent my daughter off yesterday. She just got back from, those of you familiar with Milwaukee, know that Summerfest goes on about this time of year, and she was at a friend's house. They spent a couple days at Summerfest. She was home for all of about 14 hours. She packed her bags, and the youth group at Peace, where we belong, was going to take an extended trip, and they were going up to the cities to go to the Mall of America, and then down to New Ulm to visit Martin Luther College. So they kind of made it a recruitment trip as well, and then over to the youth rally. So, and my son's going to the youth rally as well, even though he's in college. He's helping out with some stuff over there, so he'll be driving over on Wednesday. So. Everybody but my oldest daughter, who is totally wrapped up in wedding stuff right now, which I can understand, which is this weekend. So,
oh, wow. Lots of excitement.
Big week for us. So,
for sure.
Top that.
Yeah, I don't think I can. We aren't doing the wedding thing for a while. Right?
So, it will come. Yeah. And it'll make you feel very old. All right. But so what are we talking about today, Sally? We have to talk about something, I suppose.
I guess we're going to talk about the small world that we're in, and I guess it kind of proves with our discussion right there, you know, that we're in a small world because our kids are heading to the same event this weekend, Martin,
that's
just one example of, you know, the kind of connections that we all have. I guess we all refer to that as Wells connections, you know, affectionately, and it doesn't take long to make those Wells connections, but even beyond the Wells.
This would be about the time my oldest daughter would break into It's a Small Wells, after all.
Okay, there you go.
It's everywhere we go, we do the Wells connection thing. But we're going to talk we're going to go back to Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody. And the title of this chapter, chapter 9, if you're following along at home, is Fitting Our Tools to a Small World. What does he mean?
Well, the fact that we are all connected and that we have these web-based tools that connect us even more is really the subject of this. And he spends a lot of time on the social side of things about how we have small connections and then larger connecting people that are connected to a lot of folks. And through those different connections, then it becomes a very small world.
Right. He talks about small world networks of small groups and large groups, and those connectors that you're talking about connect those small groups into a network of individuals. And Malcolm Gladwell, who I've recommended in the past, and I've read a number of his books. I'm reading his book Blink right now, but in his book Outliers, where he talks about these people called connectors. And obviously all of us can't know everybody, but there are some of us who know more people than most, and they serve as these connectors between some of these groups. So there's basically says a few people account for wildly disproportionate, I can't even talk today, a disproportionate amount of the overall connectivity.
Yeah, and I could definitely see applications of this in a large congregation, Martin. You know, here in Sleepy Eye, the roots are deep, and a lot of people know everybody. But you know, in the past, being members of larger congregations, I remember attending St. Paul's in New Ulm, and we would regularly attend a certain service and sit in a certain area of the church, and we knew the people who sat around us, you know. So that was our little small group within the congregation, and then by knowing those people, that branched us into other groups within the congregation. So, you know, I can definitely see it playing out if you kind of take a step back and look at your relationships within your congregation even.
I think we've talked about this in the past. Large congregations have an additional challenge where there are inherent barriers to fellowship and the connectivity or the closeness of a congregation. And that's why I think a lot of our congregations think about daughtering congregations once they get to a certain size, because it's just very, very difficult to keep people connected. And that's part of why we meet together. We certainly have common goals like outreach, but we also have common goals of supporting and encouraging one another. And boy, it's tough to do that when you have 1,500 people. So that was really one of the core points, I think, of this particular chapter, that it is possible to have a bunch of small groups connected by individuals who are in these intersecting circles. And there's a suggestion there that that should be worked on, that would be something that would be a very positive thing for a church to do, is to try and figure out how to connect the groups.
Right. And when you have these connectors in place, then they can help spread a message between the groups, for instance. I think that one of the terms, the social terms that they are referred to as amplifiers, where, you know, if you hear it from one friend, you spread it to a group that you're a part of in a, you know, in another setting or whatever. And in a converse way, they can also filter things out. So if the message isn't being spread, a certain message isn't being spread, then it's not going to go to the next groups and on down the line. Mm-hmm. So these connectors have a pretty pivotal role in the function of the larger group, for sure.
Right. He went on, I'm on page 218. He talked about a application or a social networking tool called Dodgeball. I don't think that is around anymore. I think there are other ones that have replaced it, but essentially Dodgeball was a way for you to send a text message and for those people in your network or even loosely connected to your network to receive this text. He uses an example, I think, of going into a tavern and looking for people to connect with, and he sent out a message to his Dodgeball application and essentially found somebody in the same location that he could meet up with.
Yeah, and I certainly think that Twitter is definitely replacing Dodgeball in that role, and I can see that playing out. It was really interesting to follow the conversation from the Education Computing Conference last week, and people were tweeting about, you know, the sessions they were in, and I'm here in the Blogger Cafe, do you want to join me for lunch, and, you know, just all kinds of conversations going on. One of the most interesting ones I read was someone said, I'm here and I'd like for someone to stop and buy me a couple of Pepsis and I'll pay you when you get here. And it was just kind of a broadcast message to whomever was following them on Twitter to serve them up some Pepsis, you know. So just an amazing effect of that kind of communication in the network, even with people you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that one of the stories that I really enjoyed reading was his illustration of the Howard Dean campaign. That was back in, I think, 04, I want to say, where Howard Dean was probably one of the first to make legitimate and extensive use of the internet for his campaign. And he was very successful in gathering a pretty large group of followers who really became rabid about their network, about connecting with each other. It became a very social thing. They pumped each other up. So they were very successful at creating a community, one of the first to do that. But the point was, they failed to accomplish the goal of the campaign, and that was ultimately to get Howard Dean elected. And the reason that is cited for their failure is that the group became so enamored with itself, talking to each other, just the fun nature of this social network connecting with each other, that they basically created a walled garden. They closed their network, and it didn't grow, and they didn't get the word out, which is essentially the need of any campaign, is to increase the size of that network rapidly.
Right. I think they forgot about the people that needed to vote for it.
Right.
So
exactly.
Without that component, you know, it didn't happen for them.
So they had a good time, but, you know, they didn't have much to show for it. And the application there is this a danger for churches? You know, do our churches sometimes function in that fashion? They work a lot at community and meeting, and we meet every Sunday, and we have other fellowship opportunities, and we have church picnics, and we say it's fun to meet. It's good for Christians to get together. But the question is this a closed network, or is it perceived as a closed network?
Right. Are you actually inviting people to be a part of it? Are you extending your groups to include newcomers and making it open to them?
Yeah, where is your connectedness, and what is God's call to do that? Is it to just stay connected within a close circle, or is it to expand that network? And that was kind of an eye-opener for me as well. When you attach that to outreach, there was a section in the book where Clay talked about bonding capital versus bridging capital. Bonding happens in clusters, these smaller groups where you meet and meet and meet and you enjoy each other and you get closer and closer and closer. But the bridging capital bridges between clusters. So you have these small groups. What connects? What's the connector between those smaller groups? So when you think of outreach and congregations, I think they need to invest in this bridging capital, this inclusive network, and essentially reach outside maybe your comfort zone to look for opportunities to share the word outside of your smaller church-based groups.
Sure. I love the quote from the book, Martin, that says, bridging capital puts people at greater risk for having good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we want to, you know, grow things, if we want to bring in new ideas and things, then we've got to expand beyond our closed groups to include others.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and just it just kind of made me laugh about the terminology there, at greater risk for having good ideas. I remember being at an outreach seminar once, and they told us to pray dangerously, you know, to take the risk of actually praying for opportunities to share the word and things like that. So this is another risk that you'd want to take.
Another thought is, if our congregations or our groups within our congregations invest a lot of time in this bonding, you know, so they're getting closer, which is not a bad thing, to the neglect of bridging, reaching outside, you never get a very good perspective of those visitors coming into your church. You mentioned that there in Sleepy Eye, you've got a very tight community where everybody knows each other, or many people are related to one another even. And that's... That doesn't give you a very good perspective of somebody totally outside of that network, maybe even totally outside of the community coming in, moving in for job or whatever. What are they feeling like? You know, and how do you meet them where they're at? Very interesting.
Very true, Martin, and especially, and I'm sure it's true in other places here in Sleepy Eye, you know, with the changing population, we have a lot of Hispanic opportunities here, and, you know, us old Norwegian farmers don't know a lot about
the
Hispanic culture unless we have the opportunity to bridge to that culture and listen to them and find out what they're about.
Speaking of melting pots, I think one of the ways our congregations are being forced into dealing with this is the advent of preschools and daycares. How's that for a transition?
That's pretty good, Martin.
Where everybody many people have children, obviously, and they all come from different walks of life. And this has been very attractive in our communities at bringing people into our congregations. We had a chance to interview the executive software consultant from ProCare Software, Shelley Spleethoff. And ProCare Software makes management software for preschools and daycares, which is a growing, rapidly growing segment within our schools.
That's right. It was actually recommended to us by one of our listeners, Kevin Smith, who is a member in Zumbrota. Mm-hmm. I think it's Christ Lutheran in Zumbrota. Mm-hmm. And they're using ProCare software and really happy with it to manage billing, attendance, family relationships, et cetera. And so we thought it would be a great chance for us to learn more about the software company.
This is really a good news story amongst a lot of, you know, more depressing news across, I think, church bodies in general, that, you know, in our church body, even though some of our schools are struggling, this is an area where God is blessing their work. So here's an opportunity to make that even better by using some good software, at least from what we understand of the software. So let's listen to our interview with Shelley. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Shelley Splethoff from ProCare Software. Shelley, you are the executive software consultant there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking some time to join us.
Thank you.
First of all, let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work for ProCare.
I began working for our organization in 1991. And have been a software consultant ever since then, everything ranging from technical support to consulting with clients. And I am a mom of three and basically kind of balancing, lighting the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so we the software company that we have here is based on developing child care management systems to help child care centers with the day-to-day operations of their facilities.
And I'm really curious about what kind of information management needs child care centers have specifically. I know they must be dealing with a lot of different avenues of information. And so what are those typical needs?
Well, one of the things, there's a lot of off-the-shelf accounting programs out there. And that's one of the questions that people always ask us is what makes us different than something like QuickBooks? And when you're working with child care centers, what you're dealing with is, one, you're just not dealing with clients. You're dealing with clients that have children that pay tuition. There's the tracking of things like immunizations and scheduling emergency contacts, time in the center, time out of the center, and how that reflects in revenue. And that's very different than something that you would see in a general off-the-shelf accounting system, which deals largely with invoicing, you know, your clients. There's a single client. There isn't this derivative of an entire family behind
mm-hmm.
that client.
Right.
And so that's why this particular industry, things that are very specific, is we focus a lot on what state requirements are in child care, especially when you're dealing with churches. You may be dealing with low-income families that have subsidies coming in from the state. You also have things with scholarships where the church helps families out. So there's different revenue streams than just, you know, parents paying tuition. And that's what child care software programs focus on.
Now, Shelley, explain to me the focus of your software, or maybe there isn't a difference between a daycare center and a preschool. Or does your software work on both sides of that, or how do you map those out?
Well, when we originally started doing this back in the 80s, our focus was just on daycare centers.
Mm-hmm.
And as time has gone on, the system has expanded to parallel markets. We now work with private schools, public schools, daycare, kindergarten, Montessoris. So any type of environment where there is an exchange of tuition or an exchange of fees or revenue for either child care or early childhood education.
And I noticed that you also have several different modules, maybe you might call them, that are part of your software, so that if someone's interested in the software, maybe they're only interested in specific components. Can you tell us about how you can kind of mix and match the modules to fit the specific needs of the center?
Yeah, there are several companies that kind of work off the module platform, and we are one of them. Back when we started doing this 25 years ago, and we started branching out, we found that not everybody had the same needs. For instance, there are some centers that we work with that are involved in the USDA food program. but 70% of them are not. We have some centers that do their own payroll, and in a lot of church settings, you'll find that the child care center isn't handling their own payroll. That's going through the main office. Things like accounts payable and general ledger are typically handled by a main office, whereas the daycare center may handle things like child tuition functions, immunizations, tracking attendance, and also being able to track employee hours for payroll calculation. And so we kind of branch off into these modules so that people can either, A, start off with just the modules that they need at the time and be able to expand, or they can start off with the modules that they can afford at the time. So they also try to work it into their budget as well.
So a lot of our sorry. Go ahead, Shelley. Sorry.
So I was just going to say, so it kind of works in two separate directions of being either a budgetary need or a current management need.
Mm-hmm. When you go into an organization and consult with them, what are you finding? Are they working on other systems? Are they paper and pencil? Are they trying to do this in spreadsheets? Are they using the church's system? What's the typical scenario?
All the above. And that's kind of the situation is a lot of times people will be using, many people are using pencil and paper still. Or they are doing it manually, but they're doing it in a spreadsheet, but it's still manual. Where they're simply doing it on the computer, but there's not a lot of processing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start working with databases like ours or church-based software or any software program that caters to a particular market, a lot of the processing is done for you. Like, for instance, in our software program, you could bill literally hundreds of clients in less than 2 seconds. If you were doing that in a spreadsheet, you would still be manually working with columns and rows and setting up formulas to add that up.
Mm-hmm.
And with a software program, you can enter the information one time, and then it results in a number of different functions.
So how easy is the software to operate? Obviously, in church-run daycares and preschool settings, you have volunteers, many volunteers involved in some of the day-to-day operations. Is this something that requires training? Is it something that you just have a quick start guide? What's the process?
Well, the software, when we develop the software, we recognize that the majority of the people that use our program, we do work with IT departments, but that's not generally the person that we're working
right.
with. Oftentimes the directors in the classroom, talking to parents, taking registration, doing a wide variety of different things. And so what ends up happening with that is that we wanted to design the software program so that when you go into the system, you can see everything from one screen. So that if you need to look up a ledger card, it's right there. If you need to look up immunizations, it's right there. It's not a lot of pull-down menus searching for functions. And so the software program, as far as people being trained on it, there is a wide variety of different tools that we offer. We offer a training, an instructor-led training, where if the person wants somebody to basically talk them through the startup of the software program, we do that. We offer tutorials so that people can audio-visually see how to move around the program, and we break them up into chapters so that people can see little 3 to 6 minute tutorials on how to be able to do a certain function. We provide manuals, and then we provide toll-free support, and our support is live, and it's here in Oregon, and so people can be able to get the information that they need in a variety of different ways, and there's going to be something that's going to work for everybody within that.
So, go ahead, Sally.
Well, I was just going to ask a little bit about the pricing model. Is it an annual license fee, and that covers then the support that you offer, or how does that work?
The licensing of the software, the cost of the software, if you were to look at our price list and the modules that you were interested in purchasing if you were a client, that's a one-time fee. So the license, it's like going and buying, an off-the-shelf accounting program. It's a one-time fee. We do have the option of annual updates, and those usually run around $125 per center per year, and that includes the ability to get online updates as well as the ability to access our toll-free support line.
So can you give our listeners an idea of what kind of investment is necessary? Is it cost per child or per center, or how do you do the pricing?
It's a cost per center, and the way that it works, I'll give a couple different scenarios. We offer our program in two different versions. There's an unlimited version and there is a mini version. The mini version is for a center that has less than 60 children. The unlimited version is for a larger facility that has 60 families or greater. The mini version is priced at a 50% discount from the unlimited version. So based on the modules you choose, whether it's a mini or an unlimited version, you would basically add up the different modules and then choose whether you're 60 families or greater, and that gives you the price. So a base module of what all of our clients have are the family data and family accounting modules, and that is all the registration, scheduling, immunizations, parent billing, agency billing. And in the unlimited version, that's $990. In the mini version, it's $495.
Okay.
And what about the – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and then the other modules, then we have a payroll module, an accounts payable module, attendance tracking, and those range between $125 to $395, depending on whether it's an unlimited or a mini version.
Interesting.
Does that assume that the daycare center or preschool provides the computer on which it, the server on which it gets installed?
It can be. The software program is a network version or a standalone. So okay. If you have the hardware and you want to go ahead and set it up on a pre-existing network, that's fine. The program has the file sharing and locking capability where multiple people can be using it. So you could be, an example of that is like, let's say, a church environment. The director's using it in this, you know, in this wing of the church, but yet there may be a bookkeeper or a treasurer that needs to see the information. That can be accessed remotely off-site, or it can be on a local area network within the church itself so that a bookkeeper can be able to go on and be able to pull reports on receivable information.
Very good. So what's on the horizon for ProCare? Are there new features or modules being developed for the software?
There is. In fact, as we speak, we are getting ready to embark on a new software program coming out this fall. It's called ProCare V10, and it is. And this is not very meaningful as far as the back end of it, but it is an SQL database, and it will have the ability for people to access the information remotely using the Internet. So people are able to work from home. They're able to work while they're at childcare conferences, do different things, be able to look up deposits or information. It also comes with a whole new host of new features in the software program that our clients have been asking for, or changes that have been happening in technology or just the childcare industry as a whole. So this is our next phase, and that will be released sometime in September.
So that is still something that's locally installed and maintained at the location, or is that a hosted version that ProCare provides?
Both.
Oh, really?
Both.
Okay.
So you can, so you are able to actually have it on a single workstation. If the organization is large enough and has the IT backup, then you can also host it yourself, or we can host it for you.
Oh, really? Okay. And the pricing is pretty much the same then?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, the pricing is the same.
Okay. Shelley, thank you so much for taking the time. This sounds like an exciting, growing industry. It certainly is in our synod. We're seeing far more new starts that have preschools and daycares than even elementary schools, which has been the backbone of our synod for a long time. So that's an exciting area, and I'm sure they all have their needs. If somebody wanted to learn a little bit more about ProCare, how would they get in touch with you or your company?
You can visit us on the web at ProCareSoftware.com, or you can contact us at 800-338-3884.
Very good. Thanks so much, Shelley, for taking the time.
All right. Thank you both. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Shelley for taking some time with us. This sounds like a product that most of our congregations could really take advantage of.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with their website. We'll include a link to that in the show notes. And if you're interested at all, you might want to check it out, contact ProCare, and maybe get a demo of their software.
Great. Do you have a preschool or daycare at Sleepy Eye there, Sally?
We do. It's integrated with our kindergarten program. Mm. So we offer a lot of flexibility. They can do full days or half days and that kind of thing. But, yeah, definitely a growing area.
Great. Yeah, in Hartford, it's really rapidly growing. They've got three people that need to manage that. They've got a couple sessions. I don't know how many kids, 30, 40 kids, something like that. So very popular. Mm-hmm. All right. Back to technology, new technology showcase. case. Again, a lot of things to choose from, but one thing that's been in the news a lot and that has application to many of our listeners, because I know a lot of our listeners are open source advocates, and that's the new release of Firefox, Firefox 3.5.
Yep, and Firefox 3.5 is all about speed, Martin. Mm-hmm. It's, I think I read somewhere, 2 times faster than the previous version. And so if you're looking to load things up quickly, Firefox 3.5 may be your ticket.
Did you upgrade?
I did yesterday. It's not one that's pushing out automatically to you. If you're mm-hmm. a Firefox user, you're probably pretty used to it's time to update Firefox, and we've installed new upgrades and things like that. But this one isn't pushing out yet. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the Mozilla website, you can certainly find the link easily to 3.5, and just loaded with lots of new features. And we have blog post from Lifehacker where they actually kind of walk through some of the important features that are part of the new software.
Yeah, I wouldn't say any of them are real earth-shattering. I was using the beta for a while, and now obviously when this came out, that automatically happened for me. But again, I think two things strike me, and one is the speed. It is faster, so they finally caught up with the likes of Chrome and Safari. But two, I think it's a little more stable. I don't get as many crashes as I used to get. It seems like memory management has been improved by quite a bit. And for the most part, I think sites render perfectly in Firefox. If I can't get them to render correctly in IE, I'm using IE 8, I can go over to Firefox, and they are typically right on when I go into Firefox. So I don't know how many browsers you have loaded, Sally. I have 4 at this point, and
you're
for different reasons.
Rich.
For different reasons, I use different ones, but primarily I use IE 8 because in the Senate office here we use a lot of Microsoft products. But I spend a lot of time in Firefox yet, and Chrome as well. Not so much in Safari. I don't find that to be as stable at this point. I get a lot of crashes with that. But they all bring different things to the table, and I think competition is good. And it's good to see there are different choices, and I think that makes everybody else better, everybody else trying to keep up, as it were.
I guess I would have one complaint with Firefox 3.5 at this point, Martin, and that is that some of the plugins mm-hmm. that are part of the software or that can be added to the software haven't been upgraded yet.
Yep.
So there's a little bit of struggle on the development side to keep up with the newest version. And I even, I think there was some of our Wells Tech listeners that were tweeting about the fact, you know, that my favorite plugins aren't ready yet.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you want to wait a little while, that might not be a bad idea either, because if you're really dependent on some of your plugins for Firefox, which can do marvelous things for you, they may not all be ready for 3.5 yet.
That problem is about to be resolved on the Mozilla platform, though, with Firefox, as they've created, I'm not sure what they call it, but it's some middleware type engine that will abstract the plugins away from the architecture of the browser itself, so that plugins will be more portable than they are today. You won't have to rewrite them. You'll just write against this middleware, and the middleware essentially will change to make it compatible with future releases. So that's good news for anybody who's really reliant on these plugins, and I know a lot of people are.
Right. So that is good news. I hadn't heard that. Mm-hmm.
I don't know when that's coming, but I assume it's shortly. Let's go on to our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
This week I want to point our listeners to Sparklebox, which you can find at sparklebox.co.uk. A Great Britain site, but an excellent site, especially for lower elementary teachers. And what you're going to find here is all kinds of printables, posters, signs, activities that you can use in the classroom. I was excited about it because they have a whole section of technology printables, which dealing with K through 2 in the computer lab can really be a challenge because
right.
they're non-readers. And to have photos and images and things that I can post and point them to is going to be a huge help for me in computer lab this mm-hmm. year. So it's it's literally got thousands and thousands of printable items here. So if you're a lower elementary teacher and you haven't checked out Sparklebox, you'll want to do that. And I think I should give a shout out to Jason Schmidt. He's my Twittering teacher friend, and this is one link that he provided.
Cool. Yeah. All right. I'm going to recommend something that has been recommended on the show before, not by me or you, but I know Gail has talked about it, and I think you mentioned Jason Schmidt. He is a big fan of Digo, D-I-I-G-O. The other day, I was really struggling with the fact that, you know, I do a lot of internet research, and I don't have a great way or didn't have a great way of collecting what I find there, annotating it, bringing it together, making it make sense, ultimately sharing it or collaborating on it with somebody else or with you. And you know, I've pushed Delicious before as a social bookmarking engine, and that works fairly well, but I think Digo is better. It's kind of like social bookmarking meets the writable web. It allows you to, once you install the toolbar in your browser, and it works in all the major browsers, it basically enables you to highlight the web. You can comment on it, you can tag it, put them in lists, you can even put them into slideshows. And then when you revisit those pages, all of your comments are there. They can be private or public comments, or they can be shared just with group members. It works very much like Delicious as far as its bookmarking capabilities. You can attach your own custom tags. It provides easy searching. So in essence, the web is my notebook, is kind of how I view it, and that's perfect because that's where I get a lot of my information as I do research, both for what we're doing here at the SAB and what we do here on the podcast to try and recommend to congregations and schools. Digo, I think, has it really put together. I know Digo is big in the educational community. I know that's why Gail was a big proponent of it and uses it, because they've got a lot of groups in Digo. That's the social part of it, around educators and how they can do that. And I've heard many testimonials now just doing some research on Digo of teachers using this with their students as far as creating lesson plans and such, or projects on the web just using Digo. It's pretty cool.
And I'm just kind of, wheels are turning here, but maybe pastors would have a way of sharing their research as well.
Yep.
You know, if teachers can find use with
I was thinking of that
sharing.
Too. Yep, any sermon research that you would do, mm-hmm. or for Bible class, those kinds of things could easily be done here. And it just cuts a step out rather than, you know, pencil and paper or cutting and pasting to a Word doc or those kinds of things. Just throw it into Digo with a particular tag, and you can annotate right there, and it's in essence always there for you wherever you go. So it's and free. There's no cost to it. There's all kinds of tutorials out there, so that's. I think they've done a really nice job with the product. It's in version 3, I want to say, at this point.
So hopefully you're ready for some Q&A on this. I'm going to put you on the spot,
Martin. Uh-oh. I'm still a beginner, so be
okay.
Nice.
I'm just wondering about that whole Delicious account that you've been nurturing for who knows how long. Are you able to import that into
Yes,
Digo?
You can. As far as I know, you can integrate them. So if you set up a tag or a link in Digo, you can have it also show up in Delicious. So you can actually use both if you'd like. Uh-huh. I don't know if I would assume you can import. That's a good homework question for me.
Okay, and I got one more angle too. Uh-oh. Because I've been trying out Evernote.
I'm sweating now.
Which is
Evernote. I'm also an Evernote user.
Okay, and I guess I don't get it what the difference is. Between Digo and Evernote. It seems like they're both note-taking tools.
They are, absolutely. Evernote will take anything. It'll take web pages, it'll take documents, it'll take, you know, your scribblings, it'll take images from your desktop or from your hard drive or from email or wherever. The difference is you essentially disassociate web content from its context when you put it into Evernote. So you grab a piece of content, you throw it into Evernote, and it's locked up in Evernote. Now you have a link back to the page. The second thing about Evernote is it's not social or shareable at this point.
Okay.
So there's the there's a social bookmarking nature of it. I find them both very useful. I use Evernote all the time, but I think for annotating the web, it's probably better to leave the web where it is and annotate it versus using Evernote for that. So,
makes sense.
Like for me, I use Evernote for taking meeting notes. I store all my passwords there. I scan receipts into Evernote, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of my personal file folder in that regard.
All right.
And I think I've recommended that in the maybe that has not been a pick. Yeah, maybe it
has.
Yeah,
I think it has.
But yeah, I use both extensively at this point. So. All right, a little extended picks of the week, but hopefully that's of some value. And there's probably some of our listeners who are saying, get off the Digo thing. I've been on it for years, and I don't know how long it's been around, but they probably know far more than I do. But speaking of listener feedback, we've got a bunch this week, Sally.
That's right. Right off the bat, we heard from Eric Miller in response to our show last week where we talked about the Web 2.0 tools on Wells.net. Almost got that mixed up. But he was excited to see that Wells.net was going with a Drupal as the content management system. And mm-hmm. he's a Drupal user. He's actually the webmaster at his church, St. John's in St. Paul, Minnesota, and also the webmaster at the Science Museum of Minnesota. And
that's
so
awesome. I think that's a cool position.
Yeah, he's built some really nice websites. We'll make sure and include a link to those in the show notes. But just a big Drupal fan and sees all the possibilities with that content management system. And, mm-hmm. You know, I was really impressed with his church site because it doesn't look like the typical Drupal site even. And mm-hmm. I think he's done a really good job with it. So check those out. And thanks for your comments, Eric.
Absolutely.
Next up, we wanted to just maybe have a little bit of a admission of a tiny mistake we made with last week's show.
You had to bring this up, didn't you?
Yeah. Accidentally spliced in the wrong interview last week. So we just wanted to make sure if you were listening to last week's show and you heard us introduce with great enthusiasm our interview with Aaron Wakeman from Camp Phillip, and then we're surprised to hear a repeat of the interview from the previous week with Jason Schmidt, our Twitter teacher, you'd want to go back to the show notes page and download a new version of that show because we just made a tiny audio mistake there, but we definitely have the correct interview in the show that's posted on the website.
And you're so kind, Sally, because it's absolutely not we. It's me. So that was my one Wells Tech mistake for the day.
Okay.
I make them regularly, though. And
well,
you don't make mistakes, so.
But yeah, I think you even said that in writing, so I'm gonna hold on to that for blackmail. Actually, what I felt like was, you know, now I'm going to fall really bad and really publicly, so we'll wait to see what my big faux pas will be. But I loved it. I got a Twitter message from Jason Schmidt. He said, what, my interview wasn't good enough to listen to two times? So, yeah.
It was, Jason. That was my thinking. I said,
yeah.
This is so darn good. We're going to do this again. That's right.
So, if you have a copy of that show, you might want to keep it as like a, you know.
That'll be a collectible. Edition. Yes.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
All right.
Mistakes
Speaking
happen.
Of Jason Schmidt.
He has been tweeting an awful lot and just pointing us to loads of really cool stuff online. One of the sites that he shared over Twitter is
He's a human pick of the week.
Yeah, there you go. he sent us to NoteFlight, which I believe is at noteflight.com. Let me just click on this link. Yep, noteflight.com. This would be for the music teachers in our listening audience. This is a way to write music online. And they have an overview video. We'll make sure and include a link to it there. But just a really powerful tool
mm-hmm.
for
it looked cool.
Writing out music and being able to print out your musical mm-hmm. scores and things like that. Next up, a Firefox add-on, and it does work with Firefox 3.5. It's called Shareaholic. Adds a little icon to your toolbar, which has links to everything under the sun that you might want to share. I'm just looking at it here. You can, when you're on a particular web page, you have the option to share it via Bitly, Buzzer, Delicious, Dig, Evernote, Facebook, and on and on and on. Of course, Twitter's on the list, MySpace, LiveJournal, Google Bookmarks. It just gives you a drop-down menu with a variety of ways that you can save the particular link that you're visiting on the web. So really a nice, easy, tucked away Firefox add-on. So if you're a Firefox user, you might want to check that out. Next up, he gave us a link to, is it Vozme? That be how you'd say it, Martin?
Yeah, that's close enough.
Okay, very good. Vozme, text-to-speech, so you can actually paste in text, and it'll turn it into an MP3 audio file. And I did this with our last show notes from Bonus Wells Tech Goodness, show number 81, where we were talking about Facebook pages, and we actually have an audio file to play for you to see how the speech recognition is.
So here it goes.
Learn how to set up content and invite people to your church or organization's Facebook page on this Bonus Well Stack podcast. The discussion. Facebook pages, step-by-step instructions for creating and publishing a publicly accessible page on Facebook is the topic of today's BWTG installment. Follow the link to the Well Stack wiki site for Bonus Well Stack goodness, video tutorials, help documents, and links to sample Will's Facebook pages.
Sally, you used your best Max Headroom voice there.
Yeah, I get paid big bucks for doing that, let me tell you. I love it when she says wiki. And you can choose between a female or a male voice for your conversion. And, you know, there may be some uses for this. It's a little difficult to listen to, I would think, for a long period of time, but Pretty easy to do.
It's coming. It's coming.
Yep. Another link from Jason was to 6 examples of using Twitter in the classroom, a blog post that he came across, and it may be of interest and value to those who are looking at Twitter as a possible tool in the classroom. I just read a blog post this morning. Maybe from Jim Gates. I'm having trouble remembering, but he was saying Twitter
isn't for the
classroom.
Bill's little brother?
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe so. He's a Twittering teacher as well.
Okay.
You know, I think the verdict's still out on Twitter in the classroom, but here's some examples for you to consider if you're, you know, considering that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then last up, Martin, to go along with your pick of the week, Jason tweeted some Digo tutorials. So we'll have a link in the show notes to some places where you can learn more about Digo and I think watch some video tutorials and that kind
yep,
of thing.
Absolutely. Good stuff.
Yeah. Next up, we heard from a latte missionary, Missionary Larry Schlomer, who's located in, I believe, Torreon, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using Google Reader, which is one of our past Bonus Wells Tech Goodness podcast subjects. And he was trying to actually add our Bible 3, which is Through the Bible in 3 Years RSS feed from the Wells.net site, and having a few difficulties with that. So I'm not sure if other listeners have tried to add that particular RSS feed, but Google Reader apparently doesn't interpret it the greatest. So that was
yeah.
a little bit of a disappointment. I added it to my iGoogle page, and it worked just fine. But when we tried to add it to Google Reader, it picked up some old readings from earlier in January. Of course, you can always read the Bible from anywhere.
It's timeless.
That's right. It does seem to be an issue with Google Reader and our Bible 3 mm-hmm. RSS feed. So hopefully we can figure that out and get it cleared up.
One way to solve that would be to download the audio portion via podcasts, which is what I listen to every morning on the way into work.
Very good. Lastly, I wanted to mention a little bit of feedback on our last Bonus Wells Tech Goodness show, which focused on creating Facebook pages for your church or organization. And one of the things we did with that show was we put a list of organizations that have a Facebook page on our Wells Tech wiki site. And already Pastor Dan Walters has gone out and added his congregation, which is Our Savior in Springfield, New York. I'm sorry, that's Springville, New York.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure I get that right. And they have a Facebook page, so if you want to check that out, you'll find the link on our wiki site. The other thing that we did was we kind of spread the word about our new Wells Tech Facebook page, hoping to maybe reach 100 people as fans on that page so we can qualify for one of those vanity URLs for the page, make it easier to find.
Mm-hmm. How are we doing so far?
54 people.
We need a thermometer of some sort.
There you go. So we're getting there, and that's exciting to see.
Halfway there.
The Wells Tech fans are flocking to the Wells Tech page.
That's right. At least 54 of them are. So.
And I think it'll be a good way. You know, we've had a group page for quite a while. We talked about this on the podcast. But the group page isn't as integrated with your homepage stream of updates from all the people that you follow on Facebook. And so by having the fan page, the updates go right to your homepage. Keeps you a little more connected to the podcast and things that are being discussed among the Wells Tech listeners. For instance, there's a current discussion going on right now about just what are you using in your congregation? What have you had good results with? What are you finding to be not effective as you try to use technology to spread the gospel? And already we have a great comment from Nancy Thompson, who's using a website called churchcommunitybuilder.com, which is basically an online church management system. So they're doing group communication tools, calendaring, directory, different forms and things. And she says it's really easy to set up, and it's given them a lot of different communication avenues. So she's very excited about the tool set. They're pretty new at it. I believe the church is Victory of the Lamb in Franklin, Wisconsin. And so we'll be interested to hear how it goes with this churchcommunitybuilder.com website.
And how do people find us on Facebook, Sally?
Well, you can certainly just use the search area in the upper corner of the Facebook page and type out Wells Tech, and you'll end up with links to our Wells Tech podcast page on Facebook.
A real-time update, Sally, 55 fans now.
Oh, wow. And growing.
And growing.
Very good.
That's right. 54 plus, we should have said. All right, that's it for our community feedback. As always, everybody listening is welcome to provide feedback. WellsTech@wells.net is the email address. WellsTech.wells.net is the website. We have a voicemail phone number. We have a Facebook presence. You can find us in all kinds of different locations. If you want to tag something for us to talk about on Delicious, use the Wells Tech tag, participate in the listserv. There's all kinds of links on our website as to how to give us feedback. We appreciate that. That's one of my favorite parts of the show.
Definitely learn a lot from our listeners.
Yep, absolutely. So I think we've gone on long enough for another show. Next week, we will continue with the BWTG series that we've been running over the summer, bonus Wells Tech goodness. And I'm up next week, and I will be talking about how to create web graphics using online image editing tools. There's a bunch of them out there, so I pick one, which is actually PicNik, PicNik.com. Show you a couple of basic features about how to get started with that. No need to buy Photoshop or really anything. You've got these online tools if all you're looking to do is manage your web graphics for your website. So that will be released on Monday. And then next week, Wednesday, we hope to have a recap from the youth rally, from those who organized it and were there, and talk a little bit about reaching youth with technology. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think that there's lots of opportunity there to reach out to our youth.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to your picnic show too, Martin. Probably one of the more common questions I get. And even if our listeners are image editing experts, I'm guessing that it would help them out to be able to have volunteers in the congregation doing some of that work for them. So hopefully we're going to provide something of benefit, some real basic steps for image editing.
So listen up on Monday and Wednesday of next week for more Wells Tech stuff. Let's close with the music of Corbin Creek. Psalm 13 is the name of the song from their album, Could It Be Me? Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
From me, wrestle with my thoughts. And every day have sorrow in my sorrow in my heart. And every day have sorrow in my sorrow in my
good too.